Right now, the World Health Organization recognized addictive video game playing as a standalone mental health condition. The agency says that people with gaming addiction frequently and compulsively choose games over social interactions, and that in turn can hurt them at school and work. Jeff Ryland is a child and family therapist with Gunderson Health based in La Crosse. He spoke with Central Time producer Jay Carlisle Larson.
Jeff, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
So looking at what the World Health Organization decided to do, how would you characterize compulsive gaming?
Well, I think the World Health Organization is calling this video gaming addiction. And compulsive gaming is really characterized by someone, and it could be a child, a teenager, or an adult, but it's their inability to essentially manage their behavior around a video game or video gaming in general. And so it can get in the way. The gaming behavior itself takes control or takes precedence over other activities that they might otherwise do. They stop maybe going to school or stop going to work or don't get to work as regularly. Maybe they stop socializing in other areas. They start to have impaired control. They might try to stop. They might try to cut back, but they have difficulty doing that. And then lastly, and I think it folds into the first point, is that they start experiencing significant distress or impairment. It gets in the way of relationships. It gets in the way of their health. It gets in the way of their occupation or their academics. It might get in the way of their sleep. So when it starts to cause problems, it is a problem.
So for all of those reasons, video gaming or video game addiction, as we're talking about it right now, might not be at the forefront of what a lot of people think about with addiction. So why would the World Health Organization want to look at this specifically?
You know, that is an excellent question, and I pondered that because I wonder, why are we just targeting video gaming? Why not, let's say, cell phone use or other forms of digital media or technology? And I think that it's probably the one particular subset of technology that probably has the most research behind it in terms of seeing firsthand that it causes problems worldwide. It's not just a problem in this country, it's a problem in other countries. And in fact, in some Asian countries, they've had treatment programs for people who have this addiction for some time now. And so it's not new around the world. It is a little interesting that we're thinking about this alone versus other problematic behaviors like cell phone use as an example. And it's a little bit like saying, you know, beer has alcohol in it, but wine doesn't. You know, I think that it's a matter of time before we maybe broaden this lens even more. But I think even stepping back further, I love that we're having a discussion about the fact that a behavior is now being classified as an addiction, because it really challenges us, I think, as a culture to look at what is an addiction. And even if we take a look at maybe the more current opioid crisis, we're really paying more attention to that, possibly because it is happening to rural America. It's happening to a largely Caucasian population. We used to think about addiction as something that was happening to those people in that zip code, and it really wasn't our problem. And we had a moral spin on it. And we have struggled, I think, as a society to see addiction as a disease. It is something that it affects all of us in many different ways. And so it's kind of, to me, it's exciting that we're really talking about this by looking at it through a different lens and saying, maybe there's more to it.
Now, the World Health Organization classified this as a standalone mental health issue, going back to kind of what you were saying about looking at cell phone usage, looking at other technology usage. Does making it a standalone mental health issue do anything specific for clinicians or for people studying addiction across the globe?
Well, I think, and I don't know all of the reasoning for why the World Health Organization selected this particular one, outside of the fact that there's a fair amount of research behind it. I am excited about it because this does happen to affect a younger population, and that if we can at least alert clinicians to the possibility that the population that they're seeing, children or adolescents, may also be struggling with this addictive behavior, I think it can help us to do earlier intervention and treatment. Because really, when we talk about an addiction, and this is, I think, hard for many people to get their heads wrapped around, it's not the substance, it's not the behavior, it's the impact on the brain. And what happens when people engage in any addictive behavior or ingest any addictive substance is it alters our brain. And for younger people, it can change the way their brain develops over time. And so somebody could be using a substance or engaging in an addictive behavior at age 40. It won't have near the impact as that a person who is maybe 30 years younger at age 10 engaging in that same behavior, but because their brain is still developing, it has a far more destructive impact.
We're talking to Jeff Ryland right now. He's a child and family therapist with Gunderson Health System, and we're talking about the World Health Organization's decision to add video game addiction to its international classification of diseases. So, Jeff, there have been some medical professionals who disagree with this decision. Some have argued that there really isn't enough science to back this up, and others have argued that video game addiction isn't a standalone issue, but that it's a symptom of another underlying mental health issue, such as depression. So do you think that they have a point here?
Well, as I said, I think that it's broadening the discussion. It's allowing for a really good debate about this topic. I think that it will allow for individuals to get help more readily because it is being considered as an illness. I won't argue that it's possible that depression and anxiety can also occur, but I would wonder if they are causing or they are the cause of the addictive behavior. I think it's just as likely that the addictive behavior or the underlying problems that maybe led to the addictive behavior could also be a causal factor contributing to the anxiety or depression that people experience. I mean, I think when we go back and look at why do people even develop addictions, for many people it is because they are trying to escape their moment, the present experience. They're trying to numb their pain. They're trying to deal with boredom, trying to get away from something that's uncomfortable for them. And that behavior or that substance, it becomes a coping mechanism that in itself or eventually becomes maladaptive. So we might have a drink to relax and be stressed. We might do some other thing that helps us to chill out or to escape for a short time. And over time, if it's repeated and it becomes habitual and it is a destructive behavior, it can lead to that addictive process. So I'm not convinced that these behaviors are a symptom of anxiety or depression. I think they can coexist with anxiety and depression.
Now, with any conversation about mental health, the issue of stigma does come up. Could we see a bigger stigma attached to this where people might not seek help in this instance?
Well, I think that it's going to be a challenge for people to seek help, just like it is for any addiction, because we do tend to have some stigmas associated with mental health in general and with addictions in particular, that as a society, we do tend to put a moral spin on this. We do tend to see these people as morally weak or bad or something. And I'm hoping that this helps us again to see individuals in society who struggle or suffer with these illnesses as humans who need help just like anyone else. I think we have a ways to go in trying to educate. I certainly would say when I started my career here 32 years ago, there was a lot more stigma around addictive behaviors than there is today. People are far more comfortable talking about the fact that someone in their family struggles with an addiction or struggles with a mental illness than they were three decades ago. But I think we have a way to go yet. And one of the ways that we can kind of keep breaking those barriers down is to have these conversations and to see that there are behaviors beyond substances that can be addictive and that they can happen to anyone. And so I think it's a good thing, but I get why people would maybe have a hard time owning it. And I think the reason is it's kind of counterintuitive, but if you were to have chest pain, or if you were to have a knee that really hurt and you wanted to get it checked out, you would go to your doctor. But the part of your body that would make that decision is your brain. And when somebody has an addiction, the organ that is most impaired is their brain. And so the brain has to make the decision to get help when it doesn't want to recognize that, because the brain is pretty well defended, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think the question now that I have for you is, as someone who is both an expert in addiction, but also who does, you have a clinic, what have you, don't have to go into any personal or confidential details, but what have you seen in your practice?
I think that many clinicians have seen an increase in especially our teenage population and our middle school age population of children who are spending more and more time engaged in video game behaviors. It's cutting into their sleep. It's cutting into their social activities. They've lost interest in other things. Even the thing that I think many parents dread, the beginning of summer when kids start to say, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored. And the go-to for many kids is a video game. You know, that's the one thing that they're not bored about. I think it's a slippery slope. And I'm not saying that all kids who want to play a video game over running around outside have an addiction. I think parents just need to be more mindful of the addictive potential that video gaming can have. I think it's pretty common for parents to say, you know, when they're on their device, I don't have to worry about them. I know where they are. I know what they're doing. They're not bothering me. They're fine. I can get my cleaning done, or I can be on my device. And so there's a little bit of a collusion that goes on in families. So I think that that's not uncommon. But I think certainly we've seen more of this in the last 10 years than we have ever seen before, partly because the technology is so much more prevalent.
Well, Jeff, we'll have to leave it there for right now. But thank you so much for joining us on Central Time.
You are welcome. It's been a pleasure.
That was Jeff Ryland. He's a child and family therapist with Gunderson Health based in La Crosse. He spoke with Central Time producer Jay Carlisle Larson about the World Health Organization's decision to recognize video game addiction as a standalone mental health issue.